You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Ashley Winch in Kansas City, Missouri, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, March 13th, episode 3385.
Ah, Wednesday, the day we cover Glenn's favorite topic. Horse health. And Jamie makes you feel better about yourself with the latest weird news from around the world. Happy Wednesday.
Actually, it's Ashley that's going to make you feel better about yourself today.
I'll try.
Jamie's off. She had some errands she had to do in the morning and couldn't get out of them, so she's off doing that today. And Ashley was kind enough to fill in. Thank you, Ashley. Appreciate that.
Of course. I love being here. It's the best way to start the day.
Well, we're going to have a good show for you today, too. We have Julie Broadway, the American Horse Council, is going to join us to go over the latest equine economic impact study that they did over there. I've talked about it a couple times in relation to some specific things, but today we're going to go over it, find out what the most popular horse breeds are, what the biggest states for horses in the United States. Has all that changed in the last 10 years since they did the report? I think 8 years since they did the report. So we're going to go over all of that. And then we have Alicia joining us from the Humble Hoof Podcast, going to tell us all about deep something thrush. sulcus?
Sulcus? Thrush, guys.
Yeah.
We all know thrush.
And so Alicia can tell us how to say it and also tell us what it is because we have no idea. Actually, we had somebody ask about this, didn't we?
Yes, it was in the auditor room, and it garnered a huge response, and I was like, okay, we need to get the pros in here.
Okay, well, there we go. And then I'm going to do a horses and history segment in place of weird news, because that's kind of Jamie's thing, and I'm going to talk about the great warhorse Songster. And then when I was researching Songster, I came upon the Unkillable Soldier, and I want to mention Adrian, the Unkillable Soldier, because he led a life, let me tell you what. I can't wait to tell you about him. And then in the post show, Planet Hollywood, it went bankrupt again for the second time. And apparently, they're still going to stay in business. Everybody knows the restaurant chain, right? So they're going to still stay in business. If you've ever been to a Planet Hollywood, you know that they have on the walls, they have all kinds of memorabilia from movies. They've spent $20 to $30 million over the years buying over 6,000 items of movie props. So they're going to be selling off a ton of their movie props. And I want to go over some with you, and then we can all decide which one we'd buy if we had unlimited funds. So that's going to be in the auditor post show coming up today. First, I wanted to mention to everybody that I am going to be at Equine Affair. We have a booth on our own this year, and it's booth number 207 in the Bricker Building. That's the main building with all the vendors. And actually, we're right inside the door, right beside the information booth. So we have a prime spot. We're going to be set up there. I'll be doing shows with Allison Friday, Saturday, and Sunday morning from 9:30 to 11. You can stop by and join us. We'll be having a bunch of guests each day, and those will all be put out on the Horses in the Morning feed. So we'll have some special episodes for you in April during Equine Affair. And one of our listeners is so kind. She did it last year, and she's doing it again this year. And her name is Julie Stoltz, and she's one of our terrific listeners and auditors. She is going to be doing a meetup again for listeners. We did it last year. I think we had 15, 20 people there. And we're going to be doing it on Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. So that's Thursday, April 11th at 6:30. We do it on Thursday night because a lot of you have reservations for Fantasia on Friday or Saturday night. So Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. at the Cheesecake Factory in Polaris, Ohio. And you said you know about Polaris.
Yeah, I have a lot of family in Ohio, and so I've spent some time around there. And can I just say I'm jealous across all fronts? Like, not only are you going to be hanging out with listeners, doing the horsey thing, you're also going to Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah, I'm glad she picked Cheesecake Factory. It's one of my favorite places.
I'm so jealous. Now I'm hungry. It's 9 o'clock and I want cheesecake.
I used to be a cook at a restaurant, and it was a diner, and it was a very, very, very popular diner. We had lines all day and all night. It was open 24 hours. And I don't know. We had a big menu. Cheesecake Factory, their menu is like 85 pages. I don't know how they.
It's overwhelming.
I don't know how they do it in the kitchen. I really don't. And their food is so good. They give you like huge portions.
It's magic. They have elves back there.
I will put a link in our show notes today we did a Facebook meeting announcement. So you can sign up there if you're coming. We really want to get a count so that when we make the reservation, we make sure we get it right. So I'll put that in the show notes. You'll find it there. I also did a post in the auditor room today. You can find it there as well. So we're looking forward to seeing everybody at Equine Affair coming up. All right, let's do some daily whinnies. All right, we have two auditor birthdays today, Andrea McCullough and Brenda Osterhout. Happy birthday to both of you. I also want to give a big welcome to some new Patreon members, some new auditors, Roxanne and Christine and Eric. All three of them signed up this week. We really appreciate you guys, and thank you so much for signing up. You can find the auditor room by searching HRN Auditors on Facebook and ask to join. I think a couple of you did already. And another guy, Eric, welcome. It's so nice. We're so outnumbered. It's always nice to get another guy in there. I think there's five of us in there that are guys out of 500. So I'm so glad of that, and we really do appreciate your support.
My Daily Whinny goes out to HRN's newest host. Her name is Kat Gunther, and she is my new co-host for a monthly show coming to Horses in the Morning. Drum roll, please. The Quarter Horse Podcast.
I scared Jennifer to death. That was a drum roll.
Sorry, Jen.
Sorry, Jen.
We're so excited to be bringing you guys a new show all about the most popular breed of horse, which Julie will touch on later when we're talking about the economic impacts study. And we're just talking everything about this amazing breed. Kat grew up showing in the AQHA circuit. I grew up riding quarter horses, not in breed specific shows, but doing everything that you could possibly imagine with the darn animals. And they're just my favorite. And Kat is a hoot and a holler. So our first show will be coming to you next week on Tuesday. And I can't wait to hear you guys hear your thoughts. I hope you love it as much as I do. My cheeks hurt after we were done recording last night because I was just laughing away. It was such a good time.
I feel like most of us have owned a quarter horse at one time or another, right? I mean, we have. And I think most people have when you take a look at it. And Kat, I met her at ADA last year at WISA and at the trade show. And I just, as soon as I met her, I said, this girl should be host. And, you know, you guys know how I pick hosts. I just have a feeling that when I meet somebody and they're dynamic and they're fun and they're huggable, and that she is all of those. So I'm just so excited she agreed to do this.
Me too. We're having a really good time. And then I'm having fun on my other shows as well. We've been putting out two episodes of the Show Jumping podcast every month, and we've been starting to receive questions being written in. And so that's been really fun, is answering real people's real questions. And that's been a highlight of mine. And I know we've gotten some love and questions about sleep stories. I hope to be bringing you season two in the future. For now, if you just keep listening to season one, I promise you'll still fall asleep.
and I mean, Ashley is kind of having a baby soon, too. So how's that going? How's the old baby thing going?
It's really good. I'm over the halfway mark, which is crazy. I'm at 21 weeks and change. And so, You're supposed to go to 40.
I mean, on the cruise, you were just starting a show. I mean, it just seems like it's going
pretty
fast.
It's all belly. Yeah. It's all belly there, so far. I mean, I'm only wearing leggings and stretchy pants, which isn't really that different from what I wear when I'm not pregnant, to be honest. But it's... I'm feeling great. My energy's back. I'm excited. We actually found out we're moving officially out west, and our timeline for that got moved up very quickly. So I will be a resident of New Mexico this time next month, as a matter of fact.
And you had something else very exciting happen. And this Helena had the same thing when she went to sell her house in Rhode Island. She sold it the next day to, and they kind of had a bidding war, and it went over asking. You kind of had the same thing happen.
I did. And let me tell you, my little pregnant heart could not, like, it was so exciting.
I mean, you put it for a sale one day and you sold it the next, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think we did the math. It was within 28 hours we were under contract.
I hope we sell ours, it goes that quick.
I'm giving you all the vibes. You're next on the list for fast house selling.
God, you too. The next day, an over asking price. That's just amazing, and congratulations.
And no contingencies. Oh, thank you.
That's the other thing, no contingencies.
Yeah. It was a beautiful thing, and so now I'm just excited. And thank you to the auditors. I have had a few reach out, and you know, we're already making plans to go riding.
I know, in New Mexico?
Oh, yeah, baby.
Oh, yeah, cool. You know, it is fun, too. You were going to move after you had the baby, like shortly after.
Yes.
And this will be, I think this is going to be better.
I mean, I'm just excited to get out of the Midwest. I know we have lots of listeners here, and I love you for loving it here. But I am so excited for some sunshine, some warmth, and a change of scenery. So we're very excited.
I wanted to mention one thing before we get to our first guest, and that is the Horse Nation did an update on the Paris Olympics and showed a bunch of pictures of the venue that they're building there for the horse stuff in Versailles. So check that out. It's very French when you look at the design, and it's very Paris when you look at the design. It's beautiful, and it's going to be cool. They have it. There's no pictures yet from cross country. That's coming, and I'm sure we'll see those soon. But it starts July 26th is the first horse inspection. The 27th is dressage. The 28th is cross country, and the 29th is the second horse inspection and show jumping. So that's all coming up very quickly for the Olympics in France. But yeah, go there. I'll post a link to that in our show notes as well, to Horse Nation's article and the pictures. You have to go check it out. It is very cool. And before we get to Julie, I wanted to mention LiveEQ is a free app for equestrians. It's breaking down barriers and making the sport more accessible to everyone. The app connects riders with local opportunities such as riding lessons, horse leasing, equestrian jobs. It really is the most thorough app we have seen that has tried to do this over the years. And as you know, Jamie and I have been waiting for an app like this. We always thought there should be a website or an app that you could go to and find things in your local area. And, you know, we had one of our auditors recently talking about equestrian jobs. That's also on there. But if you're looking to anything to do with equestrian in your area, check out LiveEQ in your app store today. And it's liveeq.com. And what's the big thing about it? It's free. So go check it out today. Now, Julie Broadway, she's a host here on Horses in the Morning once a month, but I wanted to have her on because I want to talk to her about the numbers because this stuff fascinates me. And she's coming on from the American Horse Council to talk about their latest economic impact study. And they do the comprehensive study about horses in the country every so many years. And they're the ones everybody looks to. As a matter of fact, in our company meeting for Equine Network yesterday, this came up as one of the studies to look at. So let's get Julie on. Julie, thanks so much for joining us. I know you're a regular here on the show anyway, but I haven't had the opportunity to talk to you about this. So the Economic Impact Survey, how often is that done?
We try to do it every 5 years, but I'll be honest and say we did the last one in 2017, and COVID sort of put us a little behind the eight ball. So we got the new one done last year.
Okay. And how is the survey done? I mean, what do you do?
So this is Yeah, this is not a census, so let me be clear about that. We don't actually go out and physically count how many horses or those kinds of things.
you don't have people in states driving around the back roads, Julie, counting horses?
No, we don't. No, but it's done through a series of surveys. There are two main surveys. One goes to horse owners all around the country. The other goes to suppliers that work in the industry. And then we have about 20 specialty surveys. Those are surveys that are specifically designed for certain segments of the industry, like one that goes to racetracks, or one that goes to equine assisted service facilities, or one that goes to academia. The list goes on and on. And then in addition to doing all that survey work, we have to do secondary research, because of course we want to validate what we see are the trends and what we're learning from the data that we are collecting, and double check it and verify it against other sources to make sure it's all right. So it's a whole year long process to calculate and collect and, you know, do regression analysis and do all those things that statisticians do.
And it's very
to make it work.
It's very comprehensive. I mean, I went through it this morning. It is, I can tell it. This would have taken you a long time to put together, no question about it. And it is the most comprehensive of its kind in the horse world, right?
It is, and I love for your listeners to understand there are some distinct differences. When the U.S. Department of Agriculture does its national animal statistics for the ag industry, they have a very narrow definition of which horses qualify, and that's, by their definition, is what they call working farms. Uh-huh. So their number comes back and says, oh, there are 2.4 million horses in the U.S., and we know they're not counting horses that are in lesson barns or training facilities or those kinds of
or
things.
Or backyard.
Backyards, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, because they're not on these, quote, working farms.
I mean, backyard horses are the majority of the horses in this country. I mean, it's majority of our listeners, you know, are trail riders and things and have backyard horses. What was the surprising trend or figure from the last survey that stood out to you? There's always something that jumps out.
So I'm not going to say it was surprising, but we were pleasantly pleased. You know, when we went through the pandemic, we were afraid that we were going to see some contraction or some softening in the industry, and that did not turn out to be the case at all. In fact, the pandemic turned out to be sort of a silver lining for our industry. But what we're so pleased with is the overall added value to the U.S. economy jumped up from $122 billion in 2017 to $177 billion in 2023.
Wow.
So up by $55 billion. So we were really, really, we were like, wow, okay, that's great. Now, some people have said, well, is that because of inflation? So yeah, there may be a little bit of inflation in there, but we also saw jobs jump up, and we saw salaries and wages jump up. And so that tells us it's not all about inflation. There's some good things happening out there in the space, and we feel like things are thriving, and we're excited about that.
Well, that's all good news.
it's all good news. Now, not surprising, and it's not bad news necessarily, but we did see the horse population go down. We knew that was coming because breeding is slowing a little bit, and we saw some registry trends that were sort of sliding down a little. So we went from 7.2 million horses to 6.65 million horses. So
I don't think that's a bad thing, right? Actually,
no, I don't either. Yeah. I don't think that that's a bad thing either.
Yeah, because I think we were overbreeding for 10, 20 years there. We were kind of overbreeding a bit. I know we've talked about that in the past, too.
Yeah, and I actually believe, Glenn, you know, that one of the things that we've seen is, thank goodness to modern medicine, horses are living longer. So people aren't doing as much breeding because the horses that they have are sticking around.
Now, of course, our listeners are scattered all over the country and the world, actually, but we have listeners in all 50 states, and we always take a look at which states have the most number of horses, and I don't think that's changed, actually. Texas, number one, and number two, California, number three, Florida, number four was Ohio, which I always thought it was Pennsylvania, but Ohio jumped in there, huh?
Yep. So not much changes, but we saw just a little flux after we hit out about the top, you know, couple of ones that are there.
And then Oklahoma, number five. So I think they would be the ones you'd guess. New York was always high up on the list, too, and that's dropped down a bit. So that, you know, so, and I guess it, you know, New York was always there because of racing and things like that. But yeah, so Florida number three, and I contribute to two of those horses, by the way. So, just,
well, you asked me about things that were surprising. This time we asked the consultants to give us a complete, population breakdown by breed.
Oh yes.
And not surprising, but quarter horses were top, then thoroughbreds and paints. And then standard breeds. But the one that shocked me the most was next in line was mules and donkeys.
Really? Was number five?
Yeah. And I was like, wow. And we also saw miniature horses was in the top 10 this time.
Wow.
So we were like, couple of nuances there that we weren't quite expecting.
I think mini horses have become a thing. You know, that people are – mini horses and mini donkeys have kind of become a thing that if you own a bunch – even some of the professional riders and showers I know now have a mini horse.
And you have seen miniatures being used more in equine-assisted services and equine-assisted learning facilities. We're seeing them become more like the companion to your full-size horse. You know, he needs a buddy, a little buddy.
So in the top 10, so we had quarter horses, thoroughbreds, paint horses, standardbreds, mules and donkeys, Arabian, half Arabian, warm bloods, miniature, Tennessee walking, and then ponies. And I think standardbred number four kind of surprised me because, you know, this standardbred racing world has been shrinking, and I just was kind of surprised to see it number four.
Well, and they were one of the breeds this time that had an increase. When you look at our next report, which is going to come out in a few weeks, we've got some more details on the breed registration trends, and we're actually seeing standardbreds go up a little bit.
Wow. Okay. And then the other one that I was kind of surprised, well, not surprised, I think this has probably been a change if we looked at the 2017, is the number of warm bloods here, because we are importing a lot more warm bloods than we used to.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Then we used to from what, when you did this last one in 2017. And then we always joke about Frisians, because in every movie and every TV show, the only horse you see anymore is a Frisian, right? So they use them for all the TV. But they are on the list. They're in the top 20. Frisians are in the top 20. So there are a number of Frisians out there. The other one, too, that jumped out at me and would be a big change from 100 years ago is draft horses, because 100 years ago, horses would have been number one. You know, they would have been the lead because they were used for everything from transportation to farm work to everything. So draft horses are still in there. They're number 12 on the list. But, you know, that's definitely would have been different 100 years ago.
Yeah, and I would offer that if we could get at the data from the Amish in the Mennonite community, we might see that number go up even more. That's a really challenging audience to get to respond to our survey.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can see that. So was there anything else?
I found some fascinating points this time around. We continue to see really strong numbers from 2017 of the number of horse enthusiasts. For your listeners' benefit, that's any household in the U.S. that has someone who is passionate about horses. They don't have to own, they don't have to participate, but they might spectate. So it breaks into a number of different categories. But the total number is 39 million households contain a horse enthusiast. And we think that's a really big number to share. We think it's a great statistic.
And what about the number that own horses? Do we know that number?
Yeah. The number that own horses is 1.6 million is the estimate right now.
Wow. Okay. So when we did our survey here recently of our listeners, we found that the average listener owned like 2.5 horses. And that kind of fits then with what you're talking about here too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It certainly does.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other statistic that I found really fascinating this time around was we have 2.2 million jobs in the industry. But when we ask the question about volunteers, we have another 2 million volunteers in the industry.
Huh.
So that's a fascinating statistic, I think.
And podcast hosts, was that listed in there? Is there
I don't know that job description was in there.
I can tell you there's about 100 of us.
But people often ask me the question, okay, so what do you do with all this data? Well, of course, we use it at the federal, state, and local level to sort of make our case for things that help our industry or to turn around things that might have unintended consequences. But they want to put it in context, like how big is the horse industry compared to some other industries? So just because I had it handy, the last outdoor recreation economic impact study, which looks at all outdoor recreation activities, we are bigger than RVing, and we are bigger than motorcycling and ATVing.
Really?
And so people are like, huh, because we're always trying to put this in context, because when you say we have, you know, 6.65 million horses, people are like, well, how many is that? I actually asked the staff, if I put all horses head to tail, could I wrap them around, you know, the United States a couple of times? You know, how much could I do a visual of that?
Now, we could probably figure that out, the average horse length and how many times it'd go around the world or to the moon.
Yeah, there you go. To the moon, whatever. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Julie, this has been fascinating. And where can people get it, find it?
Sure. So two things to know. Number one, go to www.horsecouncil.org. That's our website. On the website, you can find a one-page front and back infographic with the key metrics on it. And it's free. People can download the PDF and do what they want to with it. The study, which has all the details, you purchase through our publication link. It's about a 60-page report, lots and lots of statistics. And then in about 3 weeks, we are coming out with the second report, which we are calling the appendices, which contains even more details and has a lot of other consumer data that we don't normally do in an economic impact study, but we took the opportunity this time to ask a lot of interesting questions and to get some sense of what people are thinking, like, you know, where do you purchase your tack and equipment? Top two answers, locally and online. Okay, well, that's kind of interesting to know. And we ask questions like, in the next 5 years, how involved will you expect to be with horses? Top two answers, more active and about the same level of involvement. So we're like, hey, that's a good indicator. So lots and lots of nuances that came out of those kinds of questions that'll be in the second report.
Very good. Well, Julie, thank you so much for doing what you do. I know this was a lot of work, and I'll let you get back to fighting with congressmen now.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. See you, Julie. Good news for the horse world, right? That numbers are up, and we all thought that the world was going to fall apart to being COVID, and look what happened, right? I mean, it was the exact opposite, especially with houses selling. So. Yeah,
absolutely. We love some good news when the sky is falling, you know, so happy to see it.
And we finally have a show about the number one horse breed in the country. So there you go.
It's so weird how it just aligns like that.
So I wanted to mention that State Line is also going to be at Equine Affair. You can find State Line Tech there April 11th through the 14th. They're in, I'm not sure which building they're in, but you can't miss them. They always have the biggest booth there. So that will be coming up at Equine Affair. They're also going to be in Kentucky at the Kentucky 3-Day. They're always set up in the old arena, which is where all the vendors are. And trust me, you can't miss their booth. It takes up half the arena. And then also Equine Affair in Massachusetts, they'll be there in November 7th through the 10th. So if you can't make one of those places, just stop by statelinetac.com and you can shop there every single day.
This Horse Health Report is brought to you by Daily Dose Equine, non-GMO core nutrition for horses and ponies of all ages. Now, I am so excited to have on the show with us today Alicia Harlov of the Humble Hoof Podcast and fame. Now, Alicia, this topic came to us in the auditor room. And while I was obviously very familiar with thrush, before we hit record, I had to double check how to even pronounce this word, deep sulcus thrush. Can you tell us what it is precisely, please?
Yeah. So I think most people are familiar with thrush itself. You know, it's a microbial infection in the frog, and deep central sulcus thrush is when you're looking at the bottom of the foot, right in the middle of the back of the frog, if you see a slit that goes down through the heel bulbs, that is a central sulcus infection. So the central sulcus is the middle back part of the frog, and that's not supposed to be any deeper than a thumbprint. So a lot of people, when they're picking out their horse's feet, if they can put a hoof pick into the middle of their horse's heel bulb, especially if that horse like yanks their foot away because it's sensitive, that's actually an infection. And that's something that we want to treat and heal.
I see. And so when you say treating, we're calling our farrier, our vets, who's the first and second calls we're making here to start with diagnosis and treatment?
I mean, honestly, you know, we're not diagnosing anything. Like a veterinarian would be diagnosing things. But when it comes to the frog, the owner is absolutely able to do this on their own. The first place I always start is making sure that you're giving the horse everything it needs to have a healthy body and healthy feet. So for me, that's making sure that they have a really good diet. You're not overloading them with excess sugars and carbs that they're not using. You're giving them minerals to help them grow a healthy foot and a healthy frog. But when you want to actually get rid of the infection that's active, the owner can treat that themselves. I personally will clean out that central sulcus. I'll take a hoof pick. I'll even take maybe some cotton and or like a piece of gauze and actually kind of floss it out as long as the horse is comfortable for me to do that. And then I'll pack it with something like, I personally like a red horse hoof stuff, but all it is cotton fibers mixed with zinc oxide. So think like Desitin diaper cream and honey. So I sometimes have owners just go to the store and get some Desitin and like, you know, take it on their hoof pick and floss it right into that crack to try to treat themselves. Typically, if this horse is getting a good diet and it's moving to stimulate its frog, that should clear up on its own fairly quickly. Like I want to see that gone within a cycle or two, like a trim or shoeing cycle or two.
Wow. So what are some things to look out for? I mean, I know sometimes thrush, like there's that smell associated with it. Other than the deep crack, if you will, and maybe some tenderness, are there any other, let's call it a signifier to let us know that we need to go to the store and get diaper cream and honey for this?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the main things. Like you shouldn't be able to put a hoof pick between a horse's heel bulbs. If those heel bulbs in the back of your horse's foot are touching each other, like in the middle, that is not a good sign. Even if it seems like the middle of their heel bulbs is dry, it doesn't seem like there's any active smell or infection, I still want to make sure that they're, you know, we're treating down as deep as we can in that split because it could be harboring some bacteria that we just can't see. It's so deep in there. I want to make sure that when I'm looking at the bottom of the foot, the hairline looks more like a straight line instead of a V. And I don't want to see those heel bulbs touching. So that's my big warning sign that, okay, the back of this foot is not functioning correctly. There's something that's causing this hoof to contract and protect itself. So why is that happening? So that's something where the owner should talk to their farrier or veterinarian, and there's no harm in treating it with something that's non-caustic, even just like a 50-50 apple cider vinegar and water spray to try to get it down in there and make sure that that environment is non-inhabitable for unhealthy microbes.
We love a DIY solution and, you know, ones that don't cost a lot. That doesn't happen a whole lot in our horse world. So thank you for that. You know, we have some tools to add to our tool belt. What would someone expect maybe if this would go on untreated? Would that lead to lameness or something worse?
Yes. So there have been dissections of horses that have this infection where the infection goes straight to their corium, which is the sensitive tissue inside the foot. And I have had clients, I don't want to like freak anybody out, but I have had clients where their horse has been diagnosed with navicular disease. They've even seen, you know, bone damage on radiographs, and the horse has been chronically lame for years. And I come in and pick up the foot, and I'm like, oh, they have this really terrible central sulcus infection in their frog. Let's get that cleared up because that's causing pain. You know, I mean, even if the horse doesn't seem like they react to it, it's not comfortable. And I've had horses where once that infection went away, the horse went sound and they never had lameness issues again. So they went from having this degenerative diagnosis of navicular to suddenly being like a performance horse with no lameness issues just because they treated the thrush. So I want to take it seriously. And that's why I kind of educate on making sure that the foot is healthy and identifying those warning signs like we were talking about of where something has gone wrong.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible.
And kind of gross all at the same time. I'm just going to throw that in there. I don't know how you do it, Alicia. I couldn't do what you do.
I always, am gross and smelly at the end of the day. But it's really rewarding to see these horses get more comfortable.
Your husband must be so happy when you come home at the end of the day.
Yeah, very different than when I was a music teacher. Very different.
You were a music teacher? I didn't know that.
Yeah, for 10 years.
What do you teach? I mean, did you have a specific thing you taught? Or
I taught elementary general music. So I taught, a lot of like keyboard, ukulele, and chorus. But I was a band kid myself.
I didn't know that. Learn something new every day.
And I think, Alicia, it was also your birthday recently. So happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, another year around the sun.
So does he hug you when you come home like that? Or do you have to take a shower first?
Oh, yeah, no. Especially in the summer. He's like, you're not even allowed anywhere in the house except to the back.
Clothes, take them off outside.
Oh, yeah. When it's in the 90s and humid and you're sweating and handling nasty horses all day, you don't smell the best.
And especially when they used to do hot shoeing, because when I first came into the horse world with Jennifer, hot shoeing was the thing, right? And God, that stuff, once that smell gets on you, you don't get that off.
Oh yeah, I mean, I feel bad for farriers that are doing hot shoeing in like 100 degree weather. I don't know how they handle being by the forge.
I don't either. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Yes, I did actually.
No, I think we're at a great point. Alicia, is there anything else you wanted to touch on in regards to deep sulcus thrush?
I think if you have any questions about whether your horse has it or not, I would Google central sulcus thrush to get an image. It's always hard over an audio to really convey what you're looking for. And I would not take it lightly. So, do anything you can to try to get that back of the frogs healthy and happy so that your horse can be comfortable.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we see you doing amazing things over there on the Humble Hoof Podcast. Folks, be sure to like and subscribe and find Humble Hoof Podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Alicia is a wealth of knowledge and one of our more popular shows on the network. So congratulations for that, Alicia. Hard work, well received. And I mean, I always think, horses have 4 feet. You're a brilliant businesswoman to make a podcast about that. All horses have feet. So well done.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. It was fun.
Bye, Alicia.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a nice day.
I love her.
She's great.
Yeah, she's terrific. I've loved her from the first episode she put out. I always thought it was terrific. I was so happy when she brought it onto the network. So
it makes sense that she's a teacher, that all of that comes together.
Though. I didn't know music. I didn't know that about her.
I think I read that in her bio.
I've known her for years, but it's something we never talked about.
Oh, that's fun when you can learn something new.
All right, let's hear from Daily Dose, their sponsor of the health segment every Wednesday, and then we're going to come back with some horses and history.
I'm here with the mad scientist who developed Daily Dose equine horse feeds, Janet Geyer. And I wanted to have a quick chat with you because Daily Dose equine horse feed are non-GMO whole food nutrition based. And a lot of people go, oh, that comes from a small dedicated feed mill. I won't be able to get that when I travel. They're wrong, aren't they?
They are. You can get it through Chewy anywhere in the United States. Or if you live locally in Maryland and Northern Virginia, you can get it delivered.
There you go. Chewy.com. It will deliver it anywhere you want. You can also schedule delivery in advance so you can have it delivered every X number of days. And you can go in there to your account and change it every time you move horse show venues. So check it out today. DailyDoseEquine.com online or Chewy.com.
Well, it's time for some horses in history, which I do when Jamie's out because she can care less about history. But Ashley seems to enjoy it. So that's why I do it when Ashley's here. Let's talk about Songster. Songster is one of the oldest and most decorated horses from World War I. He came from, Loughborough, England, and he was a chestnut gelding with a blonde mane and stood barely 15 and a half hands high, which, as war horses went in World War I, was pretty small. And also, mm-hmm. he had another thing going against him. They actually rejected him initially, and then I think they just determined they needed a lot of horses, so they accepted him because he was 14 years old. He was over the age limit as well. He was ridden by a trooper by the name of Bert Main, and he was called upon and actually paraded through the market square the day after the war was declared in 1914. So he started, Songster started very early in the war when England was first in it, actually. He was he had a couple of things he was known for. They shipped him out by ship over to France, and he was known for untying himself. So when they would be at camp and they would be set up there, and there were all these horses, there were tons of horses and mules and donkeys and everything involved in World War I, and they would all be in these big billet lions at camp, and when shelling would start, he would untie himself and run further back away, and then when the shelling stopped, he would come back. So it was just his way of preserving his own life. And he apparently did that the whole way through the war. It freaked Bert, his rider, out the first time because he came back and the horse was gone. And he figured that the horse had just died, you know, had gone off somewhere and died. But then when they had a trumpet sound, and when the trumpet would go that it was meal time, the horse would come back. So.
This horse sounds like a pony to yes. me. Just
and apparently
motivation alone.
He knew when to come back. He would go off and get his own water, and then he would come back for food. So anytime he heard the trumpet for the call to food for the soldiers, he would come back. He survived this war for 5 years. And World War
wow.
I, you know, you've all seen what World yeah. War I was like. It was horrendous. And also Bert survived for 5 years. They both survived
together. He would get on his horse whenever he rode away. That's all. I would just be sleeping on Songster, and you'd be golden, man.
Songster knew how to take care of himself. That's what was for sure. There were 8 million horses, donkeys, and mules that died in World War I. So the chances of Songster and Bert both living were very rare, very unique. After the war, Bert bought Songster and from the army, and he lived out his days at the farm of Sergeant Major Harry Poole in Leicestershire. And he went on to become a hunt horse. He hunted regularly Uh-oh. With the hunt there, and he would join the soldiers, had an annual reunion from his unit, and Bert was one of the soldiers that would show up for the annual reunion every year. And if you look, there's actually pictures of these reunions with the guys all sitting and standing, like, think elementary school picture. And Bert yeah. is in the back in the middle of every one of these pictures. Songster is in the back of the middle of every one of these pictures.
Yeah, I'm just picturing it at, like, the VFW,
yes,
you know,
that's
and
exact,
everybody's having
yep.
beers, and right. here comes Songster, get him a pint. Like, I love it.
He was very popular in the area. He also, he also drew a milk wagon once a week into town. So he would pull this milk wagon into town. That was in the days of milk wagons, people. And then Harry would join him for a pint in the upstairs room of the Old Boot Hotel. This horse knew how to do the stairs, so he would climb the stairs into the pub, and he would have a pint. He apparently liked beer, and he would climb then down the stairs and make his way out. And apparently, there's still indentations in the stairs that are credited to his hooves. So it was a big thing that everybody would know when Songster was coming. They'd all go over for a pint.
Why has Briar not made a model of Songster? This horse has taken my heart. I love Songster.
He died peacefully in 1940 at the farm at the age of 40. He was buried.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he lived a long life. Apparently, beer did him well. He lived a long life for an army horse. He was buried with his medals. He had the Monstar, which I think was a French award in that day. He had a General Service Medal, a Victory Medal, and 2 Territorial Long Service Medals, which were given to people who served for the majority of the war. Wow. His grave, they buried him. He had a marker on his grave, and that's now in the Carillon War Memorial Museum, and a replica of the marker was placed at his grave site at a military cemetery, and that was done in June of 2018. There's a children's book for Songster, and that is called Songster, Loughborough's Own War Horse. It was written by Allison Mott and illustrated by Liz Waddell, and it was published by the War Memorial Museum in 2018. So it's just a cool story of a cool horse. You know, we've all heard about other war horses through time, and we've talked about them, but I don't know that we've ever talked about Songster. So then when I was researching Songster, I came across this bizarre story about a very unique guy, and why there hasn't been a movie made about him, I don't know. His name is Adrian Carton de Weert. That was just some of his names. He was a Belgian aristocrat, and apparently, and when you see his full name, it's like 25 words for his full name. So it's bizarre. His full name is so bizarre.
He must be very fancy.
So get this. He was a Belgian aristocrat. He fought in 3 wars, had 11 wounds, led infantry charges on 3 continents, survived a couple of plane crashes, was shot in the face 3 times, lost an eye, a hand, a lung, accumulated enough shrapnel in his body to set off every metal detector from here to Berlin, made friends with basically every world leader, including Pope Pius, and spent the majority of his 80s hunting ducks one-handed on a massive estate where he lived with a woman half his age.
How were podcasts not around? We need Adrian to have his own podcast.
So how the heck has there been a movie about this guy? So in World War I, get this, he was fighting in Africa, and he was assigned to the East Africa Camel Corps. Yes, they were a group of soldiers who fought on camels. They said it was a badass unit of hard-looking bastards who rode through the desert on camels and launched super surprise hit-and-run raids on enemy positions with a hail of gunfire and camel spit.
I can't believe that we're weaponizing camel saliva. This is hardcore, man.
This is just British sense of humor in this whole thing. He became well-known for being the toughest, strongest, most foul-mouthed, and most badass anywhere he went. Just picture this guy. And you can picture this guy. He was transferred to France after he was done in Africa during World War I, and he commanded a British infantry battalion, personally leading attacks face-first into German machine gun nests. He had his hand blown off, and he bit a few of his own fingers off to prevent infection. He was shot through the skull and the ankle at the Battle of Somme, took bullets in the hip, leg, and other ear, and somehow recovered from all of this, and he received the Victoria Cross in 1916. He wasn't done. He led a bayonet charge with 4 regiments. He led a bayonet charge, and what happened was the other 3 commanders all got shot. The battalion commanders all died. So he took charge of all of the soldiers in all 4 units, and he led them through the trenches, and apparently he was known to run around the trenches, barking orders and waving around a walking stick while the German bullets whizzed past his head. This is some guy. I got to tell you.
I just, his poor guardian angels have got to be tired.
How haven't Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks made this movie yet? In World War II, now, he then went on to serve in World War II as a general. He commanded a raid in Norway to retake a town from the Nazis in 1940. When he was promised support and reinforcements, they never showed up. So he's commanded his troops as they fought off a counterattack by a German destroyer ships and a German ski troop unit. A year later, while flying in Yugoslavia, his plane crashed in the water off Libya. So the 60-year-old general swam to shore, where he was captured by Italian troops and then thrown into a POW camp. Well, he was the highest-rated POW, by the way, in the entire war as a general. Well, he wasn't satisfied being in a POW camp. He undertook 5 escape attempts, including one where he spent 7 months digging a tunnel. Keep in mind, he had one hand digging the tunnel
and one hand and one eye, one ear.
Yes. He dug this tunnel for 7 months, escaped, evaded capture in Italy for a week. He eventually was released in 1943 and sent to this as a special representative to China, where he helped the Chinese fight the Japanese.
This guy has adrenaline issues.
So there you go. Could you believe that's almost better than the horse story, actually?
The amount, like my jaw, like I was just, my mouth was agape this entire time. This is absolutely wild. And all I can think about, you know, obviously my husband's a officer in the Air Force. And I'm just like, these military guys these days are such wussies compared to this guy.
Compared to the unkillable soldier.
My husband's off on a work trip in Napa, and this guy's over here. Are you kidding me?
We really do need to see a movie about this guy. It was absolutely fascinating when I stumbled across this doing the research for Songster, but I had to tell you about it.
This is great. I had to Google while you're telling me the story, and one of the first hits when I looked up his name also was, who was the most unlikable soldier?
Yeah, apparently he was. You can just picture this guy. He has his mustache. He had a great mustache,
oh, yes.
too. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You could just picture this guy leading and waving his pistol around and screaming at the troops.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I had to tell you about that. I thought it was a hoot.
That's a great one.
Auditors, hang on. We're going to talk a little bit about Planet Hollywood and all the props they're selling off, and we're going to decide which one we would buy if we were a millionaire. That's all coming up. Now, tomorrow on the show, we have the Reining Horse Association going to talk a little reining, and then Jamie will be back on Friday, and we'll do some really bad ads on Friday. Thank you, Ashley, for filling in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for letting me come out and play.
All right, everybody, we'll see you in a couple of days. Have a terrific day and go out and ride your horse, pet a nose. It's also National Coconut Tort Day, so go out and get yourself a sweet treat.